May it please the court, counsel. My name is Anne Marie Kill. I represent plaintiff Edward Franklin, who is appellant in this action. We're here before you requesting that you reverse the ruling of the district court granting summary judgment in favor of the city of Evanston on plaintiff's section 1981 and section 1983 claims. Originally, there were cross motions for summary judgment, and the court originally ruled in favor of Mr. Franklin on his motion for summary judgment. After the city filed a motion to reconsider, the court did reconsider her ruling and then granted summary judgment in their favor. We're asking that this court reverse the decision for three primary reasons. First of all, the court improperly considered unsupported evidence that was cited in the city's motion to reconsider without any support to the record. Secondly, though the court found that there was a constitutional violation pursuant to Atwell in that the city failed to warn Mr. Franklin of immunity he would have had for statements he made in the course of
it. So it is clear they didn't warn him.
They did not warn him. That is undisputed. And as the court will recall, Mr. Franklin was arrested for possession of marijuana. He was off duty at the time. In the Evanston Review, the local paper, there was an article that was printed about Mr. Franklin's arrest. One of his coworkers brought that article to his supervisor. His supervisor decided at that time that it warranted termination. Mr. Franklin is not an at-will employee. He's a union member. He can only be terminated for cause. So after his supervisor read that article, he instituted the proceedings for Mr. Franklin's termination. On three separate occasions, and as the supervisor even admitted over and over and over again, Mr. Franklin said, there are pending criminal charges. I can't address these matters.
Ms. Kill, does the record show that Evanston has a policy on the subject of informing disciplined employees of their Garrity rights?
No policy whatsoever. In fact, they admit that they do have a policy that the city does not have to wait until the outcome of a court matter is resolved, until the outcome of a court matter, and that it can proceed with discipline. So I would say to you that their policy is just the opposite, that they don't warn at all, that they proceed with discipline, thus the employee has no meaningful opportunity to respond because of the pending criminal charges.
They can do that, can't they? The only problem is they have to warn the employee.
Absolutely. They can go ahead. They
didn't do here.
Exactly.
So that, isn't that specifically the policy we should be concerned with in this case, the policy with regard to Atwell?
That is the primary policy.
There are other policies talked about here, like the drug policy, the separation policy, and so on. But it seems to me it's the Atwell policy that we ought to be focusing on.
It's absolutely, I agree. It is the Atwell policy. But as a tangent to that, we also have the policy of drug use or drug possession off duty. And that is actually also very important to plaintiff's 14th Amendment claim, because the written policy as to off duty possession of drugs says that a person who they find has possessed drugs off duty can only be terminated if there is a, quote, demonstrable negative effect on the employment. And this record is replete with testimony that Mr. Franklin, in his 22 years of employment, performed exceptionally, had never been disciplined, and had never been seen by anyone to have performed his job in any manner other than exceptional.
Let me take you somewhere a bit afield. In light of the Supreme Court decision in Chavez,
yes,
is the Fifth Amendment claim here actionable under Section 1980?
It is actionable, and I think in a footnote in Chavez, it even notes that this is not a mere prophylactic measure. Those may not be actionable. This goes to the heart of the constitutional right. The prophylactic measure is guaranteed by Atwell. The constitutional right is the Fifth Amendment. And I think given these circumstances, that even given Chavez read in light of Garrity and Broderick and Lefkowitz and the other cases, that he is absolutely entitled to that Fifth Amendment right.
Well, who formulated the policy on Atwell, if there was a policy?
There was no policy on Atwell. There was no policy. I can't see that even the city would argue otherwise. And that in and of itself is actionable, that they didn't have that when the situations that they deal with call for a policy. Judith Witt, who is Director of Human Resources, has to approve terminations, or what the city will argue is authorized, not approved terminations, for over 800 employees. They employ hundreds of people, and they do not even deal with it.
Does she have an Atwell policy?
None. The city even cited two cases.
Well, shouldn't it be your position that she did have such a policy?
Well, her policy was to not give the rights. So if it's a negative, if what you're suggesting is the policy is that we don't give the rights, then I guess that could be the policy. But there is no written policy.
I assume that your position is that she's the policy maker.
Absolutely. And that's what the district court originally determined.
She just said she didn't have any policy. Does that make her the policy maker?
Yeah, her lack of a policy when she is a policymaker sets the policy that we are not going to give this at-will warning to our employees, and we are going to make them choose between continued employment and waiving their Fifth Amendment rights.
And what is her position exactly in this city?
She is the Director of Human Resources.
And so your position is she's the highest person in the government who would formulate a position on these warnings?
Absolutely. She has the authority to draft personnel rules, and in fact, the drug policy at issue she helped draft, and she helped negotiate with the union when there were other issues with this drug policy. So she is the person.
But doesn't Section 183B of the city code expressly give the city manager final authority over...
No, it does not expressly retain authority to the city manager for personnel policies. It does not retain that. And you'll see based on that section of the statute that the city manager has several different layers of responsibility, none of which are to expressly approve personnel policies.
Does that mean the city manager is not, you know, like a governor or like a president who would generally have authority over all subordinate officials of the executive branch?
Yes, there is a general authority, but as the court knows, that we need to look to state and local law in order to determine what that authority is. And when you look to the Evanston City Code, it says that each director, including Judith Witt, has the supervision, quote, supervision and control.
Right, but can the city manager reverse could someone appeal from Witt to the city manager and say, you know, you ought to reverse this decision by your personnel director?
No, Your Honor, there's no such provision.
So there's some limitation on executive authority of the city manager?
There is no limitation. There is no provision for review in Mr. Franklin's case or in other employees.
No, but I mean, is there any limitation on the city manager?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the president, for example, can overrule a decision made by his subordinates unless, you know, those subordinates have some... And maybe it's an independent agency, and so there's some shield and so forth. But ordinarily, he could reverse a decision made by, you know, Secretary of Defense, for example.
Right, but based on
the
record...
Can the city manager do that, too?
Based on the record here, no, there's no evidence of that.
Well, it wouldn't be an evidentiary matter. It would be a legal matter. What is the authority of the city manager?
Well, the city manager in Evanston is given the authority to hire and discharge any employee. So that
doesn't he have a more general managerial authority?
We did not brief that issue. I would agree with you that probably the city manager would, by virtue of being city manager.
Look, it says under B, appointments and removals, to appoint and remove all directors of departments, no appointment shall be made upon any basis other than that of merit and fitness.
Right.
So it certainly seems to give final policy-making authority on hiring decisions to the city manager. Now, I understand that your argument is that the city manager isn't an officer of the city, and so has no authority over hiring. But I find that a very odd argument, to be honest.
Well, the city, no, if you read that, the city manager can hire and can fire. However, the collective bargaining agreement gives the city the power to issue rules and regulations. Now, if you're defining being a policymaker as the authority to hire and fire, then I would agree with you. But there's a lot more to policymaking, particularly in this case, than hiring and firing. It's the method in which someone can be hired and fired. So I agree with you if your definition of policymaker is ability to hire and fire. But it's more than that. It's more than that. It's the lack of an at-will policy. That doesn't go to someone hiring and firing.
But if the city manager said, I think we should conform to at-will, wouldn't he have the authority to tell the WIT you have to conform to at-will?
Yes, I think so. I think WIT on her own.
Why wouldn't that make the city manager the ultimate policymaker?
Because we can have more than one policymaker. WIT can also set the policy. WIT, based on this record, was the one who did set the policies. Just because, let's say, the mayor could issue an edict that says we have to conform with at-will, that doesn't make the city manager any less of a policymaker.
So what if they disagree? Where are we?
If they disagree, well, actually, it would probably go to the city council because the director of each department is an officer, and the council approves the collective bargaining agreement. The council fixes the salaries of the officers. So there is kind of a division of authority, and I do think that kind of an issue would go to the city council. It wouldn't be for the city manager to set. I really can't say how it would work in the city of Evanston.
Okay, you want to reserve the rest of your time?
I will, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kill. Mr. Johnson?
Please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ian Johnson. Together with Jack Siegel, we represent the City of Evanston in this matter, and we respectfully request that the judgment below be affirmed. The Fifth Amendment to the United States.
I didn't understand your discussion of the Atwell case. Do you accept Atwell, or are you trying to get us to overrule it, or what?
Well, no, I'm not trying to get you to overrule Atwell, Your Honor. As a side note, Atwell was decided in 1992. The discharge was in 1998. Atwell relies upon three Seventh Circuit cases prior
to... I don't understand you. Do you accept Atwell, or you're trying to do something to it?
Well, we accept the cases that Atwell relies upon.
Now, what do you mean you accept the cases that Atwell... I'm asking you about Atwell.
We believe
I'm asking about the cases it relies on. What is your position on Atwell? Is Atwell sound law, or do you want us to overrule it?
Our position on Atwell is that the one sentence that the plaintiff relies upon and that the district court looked to...
Atwell requires that if you want to question a worker, you know, you think he's violated your work rules or acted inconsistently with his duties, you can do that, but you have to tell him that he has to answer your questions, but his answers can't be used against him in a criminal proceeding. You have to tell him that in advance. Now, do you accept that as the law, or do you challenge that?
We challenge that, Your Honor.
Well, forget it. And move on to the question of the policy making issue, because for one thing, look, if you want to ask us to overrule a case, that's fine. But you don't just write a brief which is incomprehensible, so the reader doesn't have any idea what you one gets the vague impression you don't like Atwell. Well, but you don't come out and say, you know, we disagree with Atwell. We don't think there's a duty of warning, and so overrule it.
Well, I'm sorry. We believe that there is a duty to warn in this circuit, and the duty
you
to
have a policy.
We do not have a policy. The duty to warn arises when the employee is compelled to testify or compelled to make a statement. Now, here, he was never compelled. He was given the option, do you want to speak or don't you want to speak?
Yeah, and if you don't speak, you're fired.
That's not true, Your Honor.
That's a separate point. Now, I mean, you could take the position that Atwell is inapplicable because he was never in any kind of or because his firing was unrelated to his not cooperating.
Our position is that Atwell is inapplicable because he wasn't compelled to speak. Now,
well, I don't understand what that means.
Well,
compelled to speak.
Just
if he didn't speak, he gets fired, right?
No, that's not true. If he didn't speak, he still has many ways in which he can present evidence.
How?
His union representative.
Well, they tried that. That didn't work.
Yes, they could have asked the police officers to be at the hearing. They didn't do that. They could have confronted the information that was in the police report. They didn't do that.
Well,
they
he can't participate in a hearing without incriminating himself. That's the point.
He can. He can do all those things.
I don't see how he can without incriminating himself.
But, Your Honor, every day in this building, criminal defendants are required to choose whether they put on a defense or whether they don't put on a defense. That choice is difficult. It is tough. I agree with that. But it is not compulsion in the constitutional sense.
I think you're suggesting that we overrule Atwell, aren't you?
We're suggesting that it's inapplicable unless there is actual compulsion of the witness to speak. For example, this is how we would imagine the Atwell warning to apply in this case.
Well, that sounds like a policy you're talking about now.
I'm sorry?
That sounds like a policy of the city of Evanston.
Your position is completely unreasonable because what these people are going to think is, well, look, if I talk, then I incriminate myself, and if I don't talk, I lose my job. So that's precisely the problem that Atwell addresses. You say to the person, yes, you must speak or you're going to lose your job, but you can speak without concern about incriminating yourself. If you don't give that warning, you cripple the person's ability to protect himself. That's what you don't understand.
Well, I understand that.
So your position is, I mean, you really cut the ground out from under Atwell.
I understand that's what this court views right now. What we're saying is it's inapplicable. If I could move to a question that Judge Rosen...
It's very disturbing because you don't understand Atwell, and you're obviously trying to destroy it indirectly.
Well, Your Honor, I do understand what Atwell says, and I know what you're driving at in that opinion. Our view is that...
Your view is completely unreasonable because if the person believes that... If he speaks in an effort to save his job, if he says anything, if he believes that the result is it's going to be used against, that this will be, what he says will be used against him in criminal proceedings, then he'll be afraid to speak, and then he'll lose his job. That's what Atwell is about. You don't accept that.
I understand that, Judge. I understand that's the whole thing of Atwell. If I could address the question, Ms. Judge Robner raised on Chavez, and it often goes to Atwell, is what are the Atwell warnings as we describe them? Is it a substantive right under the Fifth Amendment, or is it a prophylactic rule, similar to Miranda? Now, the plurality in Chavez specifically held that Miranda warnings are not a constitutional right. These Atwell warnings would be similar to a Miranda warning, in that, as Atwell describes, it notifies the employee of certain rights. Now, that notification in and of itself is not a constitutional right, and that's what Section 1983 protects. Just as an unduly reasonable lineup is not actionable because it's...
But, you know, in this case, a criminal case was ongoing at the time of... Franklin, you know, at the time that his testimony was being compelled. And that distinguishes this case from Chavez, where no criminal charges were ever filed. So, you know, there's some more than a little wiggle room here.
I believe the plurality decisions in Chavez are very strong in that there's no Fifth Amendment violation unless the statement is used later in a criminal proceeding. But then in footnote 2, the court starts to mumble a little bit and talks about Lefkowitz and Gary line of cases. But even in that, it recognizes that the immunity provided when the Fifth Amendment is implicated is much different than what we're talking about here, which is to warn the employee that, look, be careful. These statements can be used in a later criminal proceeding.
After this discussion, how can you possibly say the city of Evanston doesn't have a policy on Atwell?
It does
you just articulated one.
It does not have a policy on Atwell, primarily.
Well, you reject Atwell. And the point you were just making about Chavez is completely wrong, because the question is not notification. The question is, can you fire a person because he is going to invoke his Fifth Amendment privilege when he's prosecuted? And you can't do that. What you can do is you can say to him, look, you have to speak because you're not going to sacrifice your Fifth Amendment privilege, because what you say is not going to be used against you. You're planning to, or the city is, or whoever does the prosecution, would use whatever he said. So in other words, you say to a person, what you in effect say to people like this is, you get to choose between the Fifth Amendment and your job. That's a violation of the Fifth Amendment, right? That's like saying, if you can invoke your Fifth Amendment right, but it'll cost you $10,000. That violates the Fifth Amendment.
If you don't understand any of this,
which, and if you had any sense, you would tell the city of Evanston, adopt a policy. It's very simple. It doesn't harm you. Just adopt the Atwell policy.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're just going to be losing a bunch of lawsuits.
I have a very mundane question for you. How did Franklin's drug possession impact his own work performance? In other words, was the Due Course Board or Edwards aware of any negative impact on Franklin's performance?
I'll answer that and then I'll wrap up. The Due Cause Board believes that the possession of the drugs impacted his performance in that it had caused this disruption in the workplace.
But disrupted everyone else in the workplace.
Correct.
But how did it impact his work performance?
Well,
do you see what I mean?
I understand, and I understand that point.
Yeah.
It's a distinction what I said. That rule provides for either impact of that person's performance or makes the person, quote, unfit to perform the job. That's the remainder of that rule. And the view was that this person who's driving pickup trucks and snowplows and other large vehicles for the city, they were concerned that someone who possesses drugs shouldn't be driving those vehicles, and that would make him unfit for the job.
The drug policy of the city relevant here?
I don't believe it is, Josh.
Now, you have a policy, you have this anti-Atwell policy. Now, who is the policymaker who adopted that policy?
Well, who should
she be suing? Who should Franklin be suing?
On the apex of the policymaker, of who would be a policymaker, that would be the city manager.
Is it the city manager who made this policy of not complying with Atwell?
I would say there's no evidence of that. I would say in the deposition testimony, there is evidence that an attorney was consulted, either Mr. Siegel or myself was consulted, and they were told to go ahead.
Really bad advice. Watch yourself a lawsuit.
Well, what difference does it make who formulated the policy or announced the policy? You've just stated here at length what the policy is, and it's a policy of the city. You're presenting it as a policy of the city of Evanston, as far as I can make out.
In this case, the city did move
forward.
So it
doesn't matter who the city council or the manager or the head of personnel or whatever is responsible for it. That isn't even relevant. Because as long as you're announcing it as the policy of the city.
As your honors know, there's three ways a policy can be made, and arguments are made in the brief.
Well, there is a policy. I don't care how it was made. You told us what the policy is.
Yes.
That's the end of this discussion, isn't it?
If I have a second wrap up, we would just ask that the judge.
Well, wait a second. I don't understand. It seems to me Judge Cudahy is making a very fundamental point. The question is, did the city have an at-will policy or an anti-at-will policy? And once that's answered in the affirmative, then if the anti-at-will policy is unconstitutional, the city is liable. It doesn't matter where within the city the policy emanated.
I understand. There is no at-law policy, and there is no anti-at-law policy.
Of course there is. You just said they consulted you. You gave them this advice, and they decided they wouldn't follow at-law.
No. They consulted another attorney who said you can go ahead with the underlying.
I thought they said they consulted you or Mr.
No,
Spiegel.
I said they did not consult.
They did not.
Me
I'm sorry.
Or
Mr.
Spiegel.
Okay, they consult someone.
Yes.
And the lawyer says go ahead, so they go ahead. That becomes the city policy. The city policy is not to give these warnings.
I'm
sorry?
I'll answer that question. Yes, it is not. The city policy is, unless there is compelled speech, there
right.
is no reason.
And if that's the city policy, then the Monell issue falls out, because we know that we're dealing with a city policy rather than with the act of a subordinate, which is not a policy, but just a decision by some subordinate.
I understand.
Right.
And
so there is no Monell issue here. We know there's a city policy. It's not to follow Atwell, or it's to follow your interpretation of Atwell, your narrowing interpretation of Atwell. That's the policy. So if the policy is unconstitutional, the city is liable.
I would agree if that logic follows.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Kill, do you have anything further?
I appreciate the recognition that, in fact, the policymaker issue does fall in light of Evanston.
So do you want to revive the issue?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm
prematurely.
I will agree 100% that there is that policy.
Concession?
And I would like to, Judge Rover, just address your issues if you have any lingering doubts about the policymaking issue. Judith Witt adopts rules in her testimony. She executed the collective bargaining agreement on behalf.
But it doesn't matter, right? Judge Cuddy established that. It's a city policy.
If Judge Rovner, if you agree with that, then I don't have anything else to say.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument is Lawson versus